This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You know that feeling when you have something that's really been bothering you, or when you've been fixating on something in your life that's looming large in your mind? We all carry around different stressors in our lives, big and small, and I think we inherently know that when we keep them bottled up inside, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest, and to figure out how to work through whatever it is that's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for people who have experienced major trauma. There are plenty of benefits it can have for everyone. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. And don't underestimate the power of boundaries either. Those are super important. If you've been wondering if you should give therapy a try, check out BetterHelp. It's a fully online experience and designed from the ground up to be convenient and customizable to your schedule. To get started, you just have to fill out a brief questionnaire that will match you up with a licensed therapist, and you can switch therapists at any time for no extra charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/filmdaily today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/filmdaily.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily for July 3rd, 2018. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the latest film and TV news. This is Slash Film Editor-in-Chief Peter Soretta. Joining me on today's podcast is Senior Writer Ben Pearson.
Hey, what's going on?
And writer Y-Tren Bui.
Hey, everyone.
So news is slow this week. It seems like most everybody in Hollywood has taken this whole week off. Whenever there's a holiday, that's what happens. They just take the whole week off. July 4th is tomorrow. What is your guys' plans? What are you going to be doing this July 4th?
I am going to be doing a shrimp boil at my apartment and invite a friend of mine over. It's just, you know, a small thing. But yeah, we like to sort of go all out on big holiday meals at my place, my wife and I. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I think in terms of like actually, I don't know, we might go see like First Reformed or something, you know, a movie that I'm trying to catch up with that I know we've talked about a little bit on the podcast recently that everybody seems to love. I just haven't had time to see that. So maybe we'll go see a movie. But mostly it's just going to be sort of taking it easy. I don't know about you, Peter, but for me in Los Angeles, it's sort of tough to do the whole firework thing. You sort of like, you have to go to the Rose Bowl or, you know, find some place that overlooks a huge part of the city to see fireworks. And it for me, maybe it's just my old age, but it's becoming more of a hassle than it's worth, I think. So I'll probably like not actually give a crap about fireworks. But yeah, what about you guys?
Yeah, one year I did Mulholland Drive, where you drive up there and like try to find parking to overwatch the fireworks. And honestly, if you can get parking up there, it's spectacular because at least back then there was fireworks going on at Universal Studios. There's fireworks going on in like Glendale or Burbank area. Like there's fireworks going on all around, and it was almost like this thing where you could see like five firework shows from, you know, the top of this like mini mountain going on around you. But yeah, I would never do that again. So I'm planning on doing nothing. I'm planning on maybe one of my friends is having barbecue. I'm hoping I can head over to there. And my girlfriend Kitra is hoping to buy a new car. So we might be going car shopping because there's sales on July 4th, as there is every holiday. HC, what are you doing?
So my cousins are hosting a pool party and barbecue, so I'm going to that. And then I have another friend in D.C. who's holding a barbecue as well, at which point we're going to go see the fireworks. It's a lot easier to see fireworks in D.C. just because we have no skyline. There's actually like a legal mandate that you can't have buildings that are higher than the Washington Monument. So it's a lot easier to see like fireworks from anywhere in D.C. if you just like go to a rooftop or something. And they always host fireworks on the mall, the National Mall in D.C., as well as on the Southwest Waterfront. And I've seen them both places. But the mall is like a one and done kind of thing because it just becomes incredibly crowded. And you have to get there like 5 hours ahead to get like the tiny bit of shade there. And just like, it's horrible to get out to because like there's a big funnel event. It's really fun because you're right under the fireworks, but something I'm never going to do again. I'm just going to watch from a distance on some like apartment rooftop from now on.
Well, very cool. I hope everybody out there listening enjoys their July 4th. But let's get on to the news. Let's start off with Sonic the Hedgehog, the movie, has landed their mad scientist villain. They have cast Jim Carrey. What is going on here, Ben?
Yeah, so the Sonic the Hedgehog movie is coming soon. It is a blend of live action and CG, and Jim Carrey is in final negotiations to play Dr. Eggman, aka Robotnik, who is the villain of the Sonic the Hedgehog franchise. It's still unclear whether he's actually going to be in makeup or if this is going to be something similar to, or if I guess maybe he theoretically could just be voicing this character who could be completely CG. It also could be something like The Mask, where it's like Jim Carrey uses his famously flexible face and all of that to great effect, you know, blending in with CG technology as well. So maybe him, you know, his actual character could be a blend of live action and CG. Let's go for it. Sonic the Hedgehog, Jim Carrey is Dr. Robotnik. Yeah, that's fine. I mean, this character, he looks nothing like Jim Carrey based on the character from the actual games. He's this really short, rotund figure with this huge mustache and these crazy eyes. But Jim Carrey, obviously like a tall, lanky performer. Confusing.
I can imagine Jim Carrey in like this humongous like fat suit because he's kind of like this round character, right? I don't know. Maybe it'll be something kind of like the Grinch. I mean, he's not beyond doing those kind of cartoony characters. But my question is, like, is anybody excited for this? Like, I mean, I guess this probably isn't for us, right? The people that actually played Sonic the Hedgehog. Like, it's for the kids that don't even know what Sonic the Hedgehog is.
Right, or don't even know what a Sega Genesis is.
Okay, let's move on to box office because, we're playing the summer movie wager. I've lost because I definitely did not put Incredibles 2 too high and, Jurassic World might be higher than it needs to be as well. So let's talk about what's coming up because there's a lot of box office tracking that has come up that HT, you have written about. Let's talk about Ant-Man and the Wasp. How well do they expect Ant-Man and the Wasp to do?
So Ant-Man and the Wasp is eyeing an $80 million opening weekend haul, which is peanuts compared to Avengers Infinity War, which opened to about $250 million, but it's still significantly better than what the original Ant-Man did, which is a $57 million opening. So it's essentially kind of in the middle, but in comparison to a lot of other Marvel films, especially in Phase 3, it will make it the lowest opening movie since 2016's Doctor Strange, which opened to $85 million. However, Marvel is still kind of seeing this as a success because you don't need every movie, especially a standalone lighthearted film like Ant-Man, to be a huge box office behemoth like Infinity War. And this is still expected to be somewhat of a win for Marvel.
Yeah, no, I would consider it a win. Any sequel that does better than the original is, you know, a success in my book. I place this way down on my list, I think, because I expected it not to do that much better than the original. And hearing it's doing, you know, $30 million more than the original, or expected to do $30 million, it could grow, obviously when it opens later this week. But we will have to see. Also, another film I think I might have underestimated was the Dwayne Johnson movie Skyscraper. I really didn't think that a lot of people were going to go see that this summer, but it turns out this could be one huge hit. HT, what do we know?
Well, you got to take this in context with the rest of the films that are out this summer. So Skyscraper is on track to be the biggest original live-action hit of 2018, but that's compared to the top five current hits, which are mostly sequels and blockbuster movie and superhero movies and animated films. So this is going to make Skyscraper immediately go to the top. It's on track to open with around $32 million, which is significantly less than what we've been talking about with all the Marvel films and everything, but it's still bigger than its highest competitor, which is Book Club, which opened at $13 million. this is definitely like part of sort of Dwayne Johnson's star power and the films that he's had with seen success like Rampage, Central Intelligence, and Jumanji: Welcome to the Jungle, and although perhaps not Baywatch, but he's had more hits than misses, and this seems to be one of the hits according to Forbes.
Yeah, he's the closest thing to an action star I think we have today. You know, this was the official podcast of MoviePass. I don't think it is anymore. MoviePass is going down in flames, as it seems. But don't count them out just yet, because it looks like they've raised over $1 billion for the next 2 years. Ben, what do we know?
Yeah, so they haven't raised the money yet, but a new article from The Hollywood Reporter says that Helios and Matheson Analytics, which is the parent company of MoviePass, has filed this shelf registration that will offer institutional investors equity in debt. And basically what that translates into is they're trying to raise $1.2 billion to eventually have MoviePass become profitable. And the CEO of Helios and Matheson says that he will likely be able to access that entire amount over the next year or two. So that's, I mean, that's a big deal. That's a lot of money. And he is very, very, the quotes that he has in this piece are very smug, because he's basically saying, like, his quotes are, they've been predicting our demise for 8 months and we're still standing. Now we'll have a big war chest behind us. This is a game changer. Now they know that we're not going away. So he is very much, pushing the narrative that MoviePass is not going anywhere, despite everyone's, guesses to the contrary. Just because the company made this filing doesn't mean it's a guarantee that they're going to be able to raise $1.2 billion over the next couple of years. But it also does indicate that maybe MoviePass is going to be able to last way longer than many of its critics thought, including us. What is that money going to be for? A lot of people are wondering that. This article says basically that some of it is going to be set aside for even more acquisitions. We know that MoviePass has been acquiring all these different companies. They recently acquired MoviePhone in an attempt to basically turn that entertainment website into its own version of Rotten Tomatoes. And then much of the $1.2 billion is going to go to MoviePass Films and MoviePass Ventures, which is the like subsidiary companies that let them co-acquire movies alongside distributors and to actually, produce original films themselves. So it seems like they're basically just going to be pumping all of this right back into the machine that they're helping prop up, basically.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of love that the head of MoviePass is like a captain going down with the ship. And, I imagine him on the bow of the ship, with like a sword in his hand, being like screaming this message of like, we're not going down.
We're not dead yet.
Yeah. But at the same time, like, it seems like they are in dire straits. I don't know. Like, even if they can get this money, it's only a matter of time that they burn through it. Like,
they're obviously going to invest it in Gotti too, is what I'm going to say.
Yeah, those investments in original content seem to be like the worst investments that MoviePass could be making. I think they were probably trying to show Hollywood that they could, maybe it was a scare tactic to the Hollywood studios to try to get them to make deals with them. Like, we could make our own movies, but it didn't seem to work out that well. So
the CEO of MoviePass keeps comparing them to Amazon, saying that Amazon and companies like Uber and things like that, other startups, operated for years at a loss before they eventually became profitable. But I don't know. I feel like there's such maybe not animosity. There's definitely some animosity toward MoviePass in some corners of the internet. But yeah. I think just largely their subscriber base continues to increase. So they're doing something right. It's just I wonder, especially with AMC recently launching their new subscription movie ticket subscription program, whether or not that is going to put a significant dent in MoviePass's armor over the next X number of months.
You mentioned the animosity towards MoviePass. I saw like tons of people when AMC came out with their program. I saw a ton of people on my Twitter feed being like, see, I'm glad I never joined MoviePass. I knew that they were going to do stuff like the surging and it was going to go down in flames. I'm glad I never subscribed, which just seems like the stupidest statement to say, because I'm glad I never for the last year got, as many movies as I wanted for $10 a month until they failed.
Well, I guess maybe they could be saying, I'm glad that MoviePass, a company that has maybe a questionable track record and again, like a somewhat uncertain future, doesn't have all of my information. Maybe that's what they're celebrating.
Yeah, what information do they really have? It seems like, I don't know. And the other thing I wanted to say, it seems kind of ridiculous to me that they keep on, that Mitch Lowe keeps on calling them a startup, because MoviePass has been around since like 2010 or 2011. I know that, like, you know, they just recently kind of rebranded and, you know, got that $10 a month service, but they are not, like, in the early days. They've been around, you know, almost a decade at this point.
Right.
So it's just a little ridiculous that they are kind of painting themselves as, like, the underdogs, and they certainly are not. but let's move on to Marvel and Kevin Feige. Kevin Feige is doing press for Ant-Man and the Wasp. And he was asked about Black Panther and if he thinks that deserves Oscar recognition. And of course he does. HG, what do we know?
So Kevin Feige, in the typical Feige fashion, responded to a question about whether he thought that Black Panther would deserve Oscar recognition or even a few wins. And he said, quote, I think there are a lot of amazing artists that helped make the movie, and it would be wonderful if they could be recognized. Almost everyone involved in that movie bringing that movie together is great, and it would be wonderful to see if they're recognized. We'll see. This genre, typically not. And then he goes on to name the designers, the costume designers, Ryan Coogler, and the amazing actors in the film, including Michael B. Jordan, Chadwick Boseman, Lupita Nyong'o. And it seems like he's kind of just, like, reaching for all the categories that, like, a superhero movie could get nominated for, including VFX and some of the big five, like best director and best screenplay or best actor. So he seems to be putting, like, all of his hands into the pot here and just saying, like, yeah, I hope they all get nominated.
Did he mention best VFX?
Because he did say, yes. He said, oh, yeah, maybe in front of a cute computer, but the visual effects are amazing. So
they are, like, not. That is the one part of that movie that kind of falls apart in my mind, is like the VFX in that last third of the movie. HD, I know you were a big fan of this movie. Do you think it should get some award nominations, and for what?
I think Ryan Coogler could definitely score a Best Director nomination. His direction in this film is just, like, astonishing, just because he is able to juggle all of the subplots and themes that are going on in this movie, including, like, the tribal conflicts, the issues with, like, African-American diaspora, and just kind of dealing with, like, the oppression of minorities, as well as, like, all of those things. And it feels like it all coheres well, and is not too busy or messy. And that's why I think Coogler, who's just an amazing director and honestly deserved a nomination for Creed as well, should definitely score a nomination at least. And Michael B. Jordan also is amazing. So if he was able to squeeze in the Best Supporting Actor nominations, that would also be, I think, choice for Black Panther. So it's a possibility, just because the Oscars are generally warming up to genre movies. Last year, we saw Logan get a Best Screenplay nod, and Wonder Woman got shut out completely.
Yeah.
And we saw also, like, more genre sort of openness as well, with Get Out getting tons of nominations and even winning the Best Original Screenplay win. So that's, I think it's something that the Oscars are just, like, warming up to, and it's possible Black Panther could be kind of at that turning point where they might get some of the big five categories.
I don't know. I feel like I'm cynical, and it's a comic book movie, and, you know, Nolan's The Dark Knight didn't win, and maybe costumes and stuff. I just feel like, you know, I know the Academy has been, you know, a record amount of acceptance into the Academy, and, you know, they're trying to combat this Oscars so white thing, and not that that's the problem for Black Panther. I don't think the problem, I think, is that maybe the Academy looks at this as too much of a you know, blockbuster movie, and they're more about the serious films. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, the only thing I can think of as on the other side of that coin is that in the most recent Oscar ceremony, there were a ton of mentions of Black Panther because that movie had, I forget if it had already come out or if it was just going to, and you know, everybody was super excited about it. I think it had already come out at that point and was performing very, very well. So the Oscars are always grasping for relevance, right? And I think the most recent Oscar ceremony was one of the least watched in a bunch of years. That trend has seemed to befall the Academy over the past, I don't know, 5 years. It's like, man, people aren't really watching anymore. And the idea of nominating Black Panther, a movie that performed so well at the box office, for, as HT is saying, one of those big five, would theoretically get a lot more younger people to tune in. So maybe they would do it as some sort of, not that there's like a secret society that, you know, of Oscar voters that, like, you know, determines, you know, whether or not these things get nominated for strategic reasons like that. But the overall.
But there's definitely a buzz in the air in these communities, right? Like these Hollywood communities. Yeah. But like, you're right. A lot of people are like that. Like, oh, the Academy just nominated this because of blah, blah, blah. But, right, you know, all these people don't talk to each other. They're thousands of people. And, you know, they're voting from, you know, a ballot at home or whatever. It's like, you know, Ryan Coogler, I think, has the best chance in my mind out of that top
for
five.
Me, I feel like production design and costumes are like.
Those, but I'm talking about for the top five. Like, what do you think? Anything else for the top five?
I would love to see them get a screenplay nomination because, like HG was saying, the movie, you know, for the same reasons that he should get a director nomination, having to balance all of that, the script does so much of that work for them. And Coogler co-wrote that screenplay and, you know, the Academy loves auteurs and stuff like that. So I think that would be a really cool accomplishment. I'm not sure. There's still a lot of 2018 left to come. So we're not sure what the full contender list is going to be yet, but I would love to see them at least get a nomination.
Yeah, let's move on from Marvel to a Marvel director, and that is Scott Derrickson, who is not going to be returning for the retooled Snowpiercer TV series. Ben, what do we know?
Yeah, so Scott Derrickson last year was hired to direct TNT's pilot for Snowpiercer, which is an adaptation of a French graphic novel. It was turned into a movie in, I think, 2013 or 2014. And Josh Friedman, who created Terminator, the Sarah Connor Chronicles, he's also a writer on James Cameron's Avatar sequels, was the original showrunner of this new Snowpiercer show. But he was basically, he was basically edged out of the show because TNT basically like bumped him off of the project because they didn't think he would be compliant with what they wanted him to do. And they replaced him with Graham Manson, who is the co-creator of Orphan Black, the show on BBC. So Manson was hired about a month after that and now I guess has like a completely different sense of what Snowpiercer should be as a TV show. And Scott Derrickson recently went to Twitter and said, "The 72-page Snowpiercer TV pilot script by Josh Friedman is the best I've ever read. The feature-length pilot I made from that script may be my best work. The new showrunner has a radically different vision for the show. I am foregoing my option to direct the extreme reshoots." So it seems like there's a lot of behind-the-scenes struggles going on with this Snowpiercer show. Friedman has been very, very vocal on Twitter about not being happy with the way that he was replaced. He also sort of lashed out at Graham Manson, saying that, you know, a new showrunner brought in to take over somebody else's show should at least reach out to the original showrunner and, you know, talk to them about the show. And I guess that didn't happen. So that sort of rubbed Friedman the wrong way. He's a very outspoken personality on Twitter. So, this whole thing, it's kind of a bummer. I'm really curious about the collaboration that would have been between Friedman's script and Derrickson's direction, but it sounds like we're never going to see that now.
And it's also worth mentioning that, you know, usually filmmakers, when something like this happens, you know, releases a statement of like, "Oh, I'm so sad, things can't work. You know, I have moved on to another thing. I can't return," you know, and it's BS. But I think Scott Derrickson's statement is pretty telling because he, you know, lays it on the line saying this is the best work he's ever produced. And you know, says that they're doing extreme reshoots or extreme retooling, basically insinuating that it's not going to be anything like what they had originally planned. It seems like he wants the word to be out there that, you know, times are changing here, and it's not going to be what it was going to be originally. Yeah.
Definitely. And it's unclear whether or not his name is still going to end up on the pilot as a credited director. But somebody asked him on Twitter, you know, like, oh, man, I can't wait to see it or something like that. And he's like, you're not going to see it, at least not in the way that I intended it. So it sounds like he's definitely trying to separate himself from the show. I don't know if, you know, with DGA rules and all of that, if somebody else comes in for reshoots, if the ruling is going to be that Derrickson's name has to be on it. But I have to imagine that he's basically just backing away entirely from this entire process, because it sounds like he really wanted to do what Friedman originally intended, and that's not what's going to happen moving forward.
We have a bit of breaking news. The other day on the podcast, we were talking about Top Gun Maverick and who is going to get cast as the son of Goose, and one of the people in the running was Miles Teller, who both HT and I did not like for that role, mainly because, you know, he's kind of such a more of a lead than a co-star. And it turns out Miles Teller has won the role, according to Variety.
Ben, the sigh.
I almost guarantee, and I speculated about this on that recent episode of the show, I think this probably is because he's worked with Joseph Kosinski, the director, before. Man, I was really afraid of this, because Miles Teller was my third option in the list of three candidates that came out. So this is a bummer.
Yeah.
I'm kind of not surprised by this, though, because he was the biggest name of all the contenders, aside from Ryan Gosling. And Gosling seems like it's not really his kind of role. So, Miles Teller, it feels like it was almost expected, even though I would have preferred Glenn Powell. But, you know, this is the casting.
Next up, let's talk about Westworld. I know I have not been happy with Westworld Season 2. Ben, you have never really liked this series. But the Westworld creators insist they have an ending in mind for this whole series, and they aren't just making this along as they go on. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so Lisa Joy, who's one of the co-creators and showrunners of the show alongside Jonah Nolan, said in a new interview that basically they have known where the show is going from the very beginning. She said, "We have an ending in mind. We've had it from the pilot. It's very emotional, I think. I can't tell you exactly when that ending will come, but I think for every season, what we try to do is tell a chapter of the story that gives you closure and then opens a door to a new chapter. The overarching question of the series is, what will become of this new life form? So I feel it would be irresponsible to not have an end goal in mind." So that was her quote. I guess that's somewhat reassuring, because it at least paints the picture that they know what the end game is going to be. But as you alluded to, Peter, I'm no longer I'm completely off the Westworld train. And I was so upset and disappointed with the way that Westworld Season 2 panned out that unless they come back and announce that Westworld Season 3 is the last season of the show and it's going to have a shortened episode count, I'm done with the show forever, because I can't do it anymore.
See, like, I hated the ending of Westworld Season 2, but I'm still in. I still got to watch it. I still got to find out if it gets better. You know, it might lose me in Season 3, though, because, where they're headed might not be what I want to see. But I seriously doubt the idea that they have an ending in mind, because I feel like if they had an ending in mind, there would be, you know, something in the first few episodes that of the first season of Westworld that it will turn out weren't in that timeline and will be a big revelation, and Netflix Reddit would have already figured this out by now. So if they had an ending in mind, there would, you know, Reddit would already be onto it, because they would have already, laid the details in there. HG, have you been watching Westworld at all?
No, and I think at this point that I don't want to catch up.
Yeah, because you lost it during the first season, right?
If I lost during the first season, I don't think I can really handle the second season. And it's just kind of aggressive mystery solving and mystery boxing.
Yeah, yeah. Ben, do you actually think that they have an ending in mind?
So my thought about this, reading this quote, is that I feel like they have an ending in mind in the same way that Damon Lindelof had an ending in mind for Lost, even when that show was sort of flailing a little bit. And I love Lost, and I actually love the ending of Lost, so I'm not here to rehash that again. But I do remember them saying, while that show was on, that they knew what the final shot of the show was going to be. And without really giving away what that is, it's just a mirror image of the very first shot of the entire series. So, you know, they wanted like that closure. And that's an easy thing for writers to throw around in a room, is like, oh yeah, you know, let's come up with a way to get back to a point where we can have the ending mirror the beginning. And that's very, you know, poetic and all of that stuff. So I feel like maybe it's something along those lines with Westworld, where they have like a very general sense of, okay, we want it to end kind of like this, but they haven't exactly hashed out how they're going to get there yet.
What if the ending of Westworld is that this whole thing, the entirety, including the park and outside the park, it's just a simulation on some alien spaceship?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised, because it would have that huge, like, okay, well, who gives a shit vibe. And that's sort of how I went through most of season two. I mean, there were a couple high points in season two, but for the most part, that season was just, oh man, it was bad.
Yeah, no, I am in agreement. And I think most of it doesn't, like, I feel like there was a way to tell that story and it be at least more interesting, but like, it was almost how Dunkirk felt to me, where positioning that story in those three different time periods and kind of took you out of fragmenting it in that way made it confusing.
Right.
And did not let me get invested into the characters and storyline. It didn't really, you know, it was clever. And the Nolans are clever.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
other than that, I don't think it really added anything to the story.
I don't necessarily agree with Dunkirk, but I definitely agree when it comes to Westworld. And actually, if you guys listen to Decoding Westworld, which is a Westworld-based podcast that we have at Slash Film, Joanna Robinson, one of the co-hosts, was talking a lot about that and how she hopes that in season three, moving forward, that Westworld will have the courage to just tell a straightforward story instead of trying to purposefully obfuscate everything with these weird timelines.
Yeah. And we should move on from this to our last story, and that is about the A Quiet Place sequel. And I guess there's probably no way to talk about this without having spoilers for A Quiet Place. So if you have not seen A Quiet Place, well, you should go out and see it. I'm not sure if it's still in theaters. It probably is coming to home video soon. But if you haven't seen A Quiet Place, tune out now. We're going to talk about A Quiet Place 2. Okay, let's move on. A Quiet Place 2, we are learning that John Krasinski is definitely going to be involved in this project. HD, what do we know?
So the A Quiet Place producer, Andrew Form, who is actually making the press rounds right now because of the upcoming Blu-ray and DVD release for this film on July 10th. So if you do want to see that movie, it comes out then. Confirmed that John Krasinski, who directed and starred in A Quiet Place, is still involved in the sequel, which was greenlit by Paramount almost immediately after the success of A Quiet Place. So he said to Collider, "We're figuring out what everyone's involvement is going to be and what the actual next movie is going to be. The first one is so special to us that we really want to take our time with this and not rush anything." So he didn't give any details on how Krasinski will be involved or whether he'll be starring in again, which will be a little bit hard to sort of work around since his character did die at the end of A Quiet Place. But he did confirm that he is still involved and will be involved significantly in A Quiet Place 2. Or A Quieter Place, as you joked, Peter. Place.
Or another Quiet Place. How do you think Krasinski's going to be involved? Like, do you think he'd want to come back to direct? I mean, obviously, that could reteam him with some people he'd want to be reteamed with on his, the sequel to his acclaimed movie. Ben, do you have any ideas?
I think a lot of the speculation about A Quiet Place 2 was that maybe the movie could take place sort of on a parallel timeline as the first movie and maybe tackle a different family who's living in that same area, or maybe another area or something. So like theoretically, maybe the entire family that appeared in the first movie could cross paths with the characters that might show up in A Quiet Place 2. That's the only way that I can think of for Krasinski to appear on camera. As far as whether or not he's going to be involved as a director, I don't know. I mean, he has like a few different projects that he's working on right now, and the juice that he earned from the first film has sort of given him a standing that he didn't previously have in Hollywood. So I would not be surprised if he just, you know, slapped an executive producer credit on the sequel and, you know, became, was still involved that way and maybe like oversaw the story or something. But I don't know if he's going to come back to direct this. What do you think, Peter? Do you want to see him either in front of or behind the camera again?
I definitely want to see him involved in the writing. I'm not sure if like I want to see more horror from Krasinski. I want to see what else he can do. But as for what the plot would be, like my first thought is like, you know, make it a prequel of some kind. You could do kind of like a whole, another family comes along and wants to hide out in their hideout. But then then you run into the whole thing of, is this a prequel? You know who's not going to die. Mm-hmm. And that's not that exciting at all. But maybe like you said, maybe it could be a parallel timeline of some kind, or maybe showing us pre and after the events of A Quiet Place. I don't know.
Would be cool, because then maybe Emily Blunt's character and the daughter, whose name escapes me at the moment, maybe they could come to that other family and share with them the thing that they learn at the end of the first Quiet Place, which is how to defeat the creatures. Maybe that would be a cool way to get them involved in like a small supporting role or something. I don't know.
Yeah, no, that could make sense. It could, you know, start off as a prequel, go into a parallel track, and then end up with them meeting up with the people again. Okay, anyways.
You guys have been watching too much Westworld.
No, if it was Westworld, they would be – all those timelines would be shown at the same time. We wouldn't know that they are not the same timeline. And then it would be a big reveal in the last 10 minutes. Yes. I don't know. We'll have to keep an eye on this, because I'm very curious in how Krasinski is going to play into this sequel. I feel like, this was his launching film. A Quiet Place was kind of his launching film as a director, even though he had done previous stuff. Like, this really kind of put his name on the map as a filmmaker. And I'm guessing he doesn't want to return to it in a big capacity. I feel like he would want to move on to bigger and better things. And, you know, sequels don't end up usually turning out that well. So, I'm thinking he's going to be involved as a producer, maybe a writer, probably not director, and we maybe will get a cameo, but that's about it. But, that does it for today's Slash Film Daily. HD, where can people find more of your work online?
You can find me every day at slashfilm.com, and I'm on Twitter at htranbuie.
Ben, where can we find you?
You can find me writing at slashfilm.com as well, and I am on Twitter at benpears.
You can find more about all the stories mentioned on today's show on slashfilm.com and linked in the show notes. This podcast will be taking a day off tomorrow to celebrate the July 4th holiday, but normally we are published every weekday on iTunes, Google Play, Overcast, Spotify, all the popular podcast apps. Please send us your feedback, questions, comments, and concerns to peter@slashfilm.com. Please rate and review this podcast on iTunes. Tell your friends, spread the word, and we'll see you on Thursday.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.